It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, it's business. It's business time.
Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. It's time for The Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank, our weekly segment that features entrepreneurs and small business owners telling their stories, so we can better understand ours. Tonight, a man who arguably is Chicago business, or at least the face of the tech startup community here in town, Howard Tolman, has been a longtime entrepreneur and innovator who has run the 1871 Tech Incubator for over 3 years. It was announced that he will be stepping down as CEO at the nonprofit sometime in the next couple months. In this time, Tolman has not only grown 1871, but has created a focal point for the growing tech industry here in Chicago, an industry that's rivaling both Silicon Valley and New York City. 1871's annual revenue is expected to be over $9 million. What has Howard Tolman learned about his time over at the Merchandise Mart? Well, he's in studio tonight. Howard, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
Talk about this. You know, it was announced this summer that you were stepping down from 1871.
Yeah.
Talk about that as we get closer and closer to the end of that of your tenure there. Has it sunk in yet that that you'll be leaving behind 1871?
You know, I plan to remain on the executive committee and on the board and to still be involved in some of the initiatives, specifically around education and some of the things that we're doing with large companies in terms of the innovation space. Those were initiatives that were developed in the last, let's say, year to year and a half. So I think, you know, most of the things that I have done for the last maybe 20 years have been on these same kind of cycles, 3 to 5 years. That's what I committed to the mayor and the governor to spend. So this is right on schedule and pretty much expected. I'm really pleased with where we stand. And I think going forward that the, you know, the whole space is positioned pretty well. We transformed a lot of it from the original, I think, design. And that was smart because if we had been dependent on the largesse of the city and the state, we would have been in serious trouble because we really haven't received any funding from the city or the state for a number of years. And frankly, even the sponsors and the traditional sort of support for nonprofits has been reduced, and it's been split among so many mouths. And, you know, this is an interesting conversation. You know, is it the first order of business to support young, thriving techies, or maybe you should pay for people who are in need of medication or health care, these kinds of things?
Right. The decisions we have to make as a municipality.
Really hard choices, yeah.
As an entrepreneur, as a leader, is it important to put a time on how long you're going to stay to say this is a 3 or 5 year project or I'm only going to be here for a certain time? Is it important,
you know,
as an entrepreneur?
You know, I think as long as you're not winding down a war, so the bad guys just get to wait until the day you leave, I think it's important. I think it, first of all, I think it's important when you're training the next generation of people and leaders to let them know that, you know, you don't plan to retire at 93 or whatever Mungambai or is
resigned. Right. And he had to resign.
I think that it's important that they see that there's a progression. That's something I've done in all my businesses always. We've taken some folks with us to the next opportunity, but we've also kept
Is that
some
a gut in instinct? Is that something that just comes with being someone who has a business acumen, that you understand that there is a finite amount of time and I need to know I've been here too long?
I think it comes, I think if you said it, I think it helps you not fall in love with the position. And I also think you need to know your own strengths. I mean, mine, I think, are building and sort of imagining new things and creating. And, you know, I'm a good manager. I mean, I have thousands of employees in my other businesses. But, I mean, I've been smart enough to find people who enjoy doing that and who are really skilled at that. And that takes a different set of sort of interpersonal skills. You know, it takes more patience and it takes a little more sort of a different kind of capability. So I like to think that 3 to 5 years is about the point at which a successful business is as much about management as about new things, although that certainly changed with the way technology is changing. You have to be constantly raising the bar or you're actually slipping backwards. So what's been exciting about 1871 and what, you know, going forward is still exciting is some of the new initiatives, I mean, that we're looking at, whether it's Internet of Things or machine learning or AR, VR, all those things. 1871 needs to provide those resources to the members, And that doesn't happen by itself. And so those are some opportunities that I look forward to still being involved.
You know, I think about listening to you as someone who you made your life as an entrepreneur and as a leader and a CEO here, of course, with 1871 falls in that same category. But is it important as well to know what your strengths are and balance that against learning new things or taking on new challenges that you might be uncomfortable with?
Well, I think the first balance is to build a team. So if you're the accelerator, you have a break. You have a financial person or somebody who can control your, I don't want to say excesses, but your enthusiasms. And by the way, it has to be somebody you respect. It can't be somebody that you just walk all over. And so I always say that that's building the team so that there are offsets to your strengths are important. And then number two is I think it's equally important to make a commitment to grow and to be a lifelong learner and to learn new skills. And so I think you have no choice these days. I mean,
right.
I think that if you're not upskilling your workforce, including yourself, that you're not going to be you're going to be competitively disadvantaged in the next few years.
I always think about CEOs coming in with a set of skills, or they know what they're good at, and they come in and they've been hired by big companies to come in and lead into the future. How much do they shun the idea that they need to learn, that they're bringing their skills in, they're trying to rebuild this company?
You know, I'm not a good person to ask that. I was raised by my parents to have a disproportionate confidence in my good looks and my intelligence. And so it's never been an issue of whether I was up to the job. But I think that everybody understands today that even if you understand what's going on in your business, that what's going on the perimeter and the adjacencies and the risks, that's where the changes and the disruption are going to come from. I mean, Uber was not a better taxi company. It was a different, you know, platform solution for a two-way marketplace. And we don't say that Tesla is a car with chips. We say it's a computer on wheels. And so, you know, this is what's happening. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that any industry is free from this exposure, and you're either either sort of the target or the gunslinger. Entrepreneurs certainly think of themselves as gunslingers. And, you know, we spend all day sort of taking apart business models and saying, how can this be done better, faster, more inexpensively? How can we provide better access, make it more convenient? That's the name of the game today.
Yeah. Howard Tolman, my guest tonight in the Download in Chicago Business, talking about his role as CEO at 1871, the tech incubator here in town, but also his life as an entrepreneur and innovator. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back more with Howard Tolman here on the Download in Chicago Business. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download in Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. My guest, Howard Tolman, he's the CEO, longtime entrepreneur, innovator, but CEO of 1871, at least for a couple more months, maybe we'll put it there.
Right.
1871, of course, the tech incubator here in town that is really the focal point for the tech industry that has really not just done well here in the city of Chicago, but delivered on a reputation that rivals what's happening on both coasts here in this country, around the world. Was that the intention for you? I mean, you came in, obviously it was already there when you came in four years ago. Was that the idea?
Well, look, I was involved in the formative, you know, stages. I wasn't the first person running it, but from day one, tech at that time was maybe 2% of the Chicago economy. Today it's 13%. So it's been astronomically significant. We have 11,000 tech jobs just in the merchandise market.
Wow.
1871 has created maybe 10,000 new jobs and raised hundreds of millions of dollars. So as a magnet, as a resource, as a way of putting Chicago on the, as you said, the state, the national, and really the global map, that was all part of the design because the goal is economic development. You know, we're a nonprofit. It's not investing in an individual company, it's really growing the economy. And so to do that, you know, you needed to do a lot of the things we've done. We have, you know, international connections with 14 countries that ship us startups. And, you know, whether it's the mayor of London or the mayor of Paris or the, you know, premier of Greece, I mean, these people come here to figure out what's the secret sauce. They all want to do it in their countries. So to be a model, to be number one in North America, probably this year will be ranked one or two in the world, was really important. I mean, because Chicago was the flyover city from a tech standpoint.
Right.
And now I think it's absolutely the case for several reasons that it's, first of all, it's the best place for women entrepreneurs to start their businesses. Second of all, the yield, the rate of return on investments is better than on either coast, and the deals are better. And then the last thing is the workforce is much more loyal. I mean, the average duration of a software engineer on either coast is under 2 years.
Right.
And here it might be 5 or 10 years.
And that's a big issue in the tech industry.
Huge issue.
Just being able to find the right people.
And nobody has enough, and you want to keep them.
To sustain growth at what we're talking about, or at least this piece of the pie of Chicago's economy, 13%, what are the challenges to sustain that? Is it people? What stands in the way of that number getting higher, or what needs to happen to make sure it doesn't go back down to 2%?
Look, I think that you don't really move the needle building startups. You really move the needle taking these new disruptive technologies, these new changes, and making them a part of what the big companies are doing. And so that's the impediment, and that's the goal, which is how do we make Allstate smarter and more competitive in terms of insurance using technology? And they're not going to do it themselves, because what's worked for them in the past has worked pretty well, and they don't like to change. You know, it makes you feel incompetent, and it makes you uncomfortable. But if they don't change, then somebody's going to come along and reinvent insurance or reinvent just about any industry. I mean, you know, amazingly enough, Volvo just announced Care by Volvo, and it's a bundle that you pay for by the month, and you can pick a new car next month if you want, and you get financing, you get insurance, you get maintenance, you get everything but the gas in the car as a package. And they think 20% of their business will be through that channel within 5 years. Now, what does that do to all these standalone industries? I mean, what's State Farm going to do? You know, the analogy that's a good one is AAA, okay? You know, AAA had a pretty good business
with TripTix
until Google Maps came along. They had a pretty good business with towing. You know, that's why you bought AAA. Now roadside assistance is bundled in virtually every, you know, luxury car. What do you do next? You know, and they were caught sort of by both of those technological innovations, and they're still playing catch up.
I think of, you know, because you mentioned disruptors, and there's been such made about disruptors like Uber or rideshare companies. Also, Airbnb falls into that area. What you just mentioned, of course, what looks to be coming in the car industry, auto industry. But, you know, what's the role of government? Because we see the local government wants to get involved, the state government, and the federal government.
The best thing I think the government can do is get out of the way.
But they prove over and over that they're not going to do that.
Yeah, I think too early they look at it as a revenue stream. But, you know, there are enormous regulatory issues. The market is messy, and it's not given to taking a good look at other concerns. I mean, if you look at what's going to happen with bikes, so this year we'll have 3 million miles of Divvy bike rides. Mm-hmm. The racks are expensive, and they're ugly, and really people don't want them on their parkway, and they don't want them in front of their store. So throughout China now, you have a new version of the bikes which don't have the racks. The technology is mounted on the back of the bike. Use your phone. You leave the bike anywhere. So all over China, you see these big, really ugly piles of bikes. On the other hand, the system actually works better. It works better because you don't have to take the bike somewhere, and you don't have to pick it up somewhere, and you pay basically a dollar an hour, and it's fabulous. And so now they're in Washington. They're in a couple of other cities. Chicago has said no so far, because nobody has really solved this issue of, are the piles, you know,
are they better than the racks?
Or worse?
Right,
they're much better from an efficiency standpoint, but they are ugly, and they're less likely to be, you know, sort of secure. So there's a lot of vandalism. There's a lot of, you know, throwing them into the water and things like
that. Right.
But, you know, I think that somewhere in between, you're going to have regulation, you know, and you need to have something, but it has to be a light touch, honestly.
Well, I think about what's happening even today is the FCC says, you know, rolls out what the net neutrality rules are going to be for the future, essentially rolling back from the Obama administration, but really giving cable companies the opportunity to monetize the internet the way they see fit.
Yeah, and to really control the internet, because, I mean, net neutrality, you know, there were two or three different issues. The biggest issue was just, you know, how are they going to sort of tamp down on a competitive basis, the streaming ability of the different organizations.
Right.
And, you know, streaming is so powerful now. Something like 80% of all millennials have a streaming solution. 50% of millennials aren't watching any traditional TV at all. You've got the big players starting to come into the space, but you don't actually have right now Facebook or Apple as major players in streaming. They're coming, but they're not there now. Right now you've got basically YouTube and Netflix, and you know, Hulu is really tiny. But you know, as all those folks come into the space and as everybody starts to time shift and deal with streaming as their solution for media, it's going to be really important that Time Warner or Comcast or these folks don't get to sort of turn off the competition. A, and then B, you know, it's not going to be the same kind of world if everybody has to pay for access to knowledge and to the internet.
Right, it's a new digital divide.
Yeah.
I wonder about, in your estimation, when it seems to be political agendas change every 4 to 8 years, different political parties get into Washington, the regulations change. We've seen in the real estate industry where they take away the regulation administration before. Does that hamper the way that entrepreneurs and people who want to start up look at that world or that business? Like, I don't want to get into this in 3 years, have to be over-regulated.
You know, I don't know that there's any industry that isn't regulated. So I think that entrepreneurs just regard that as part of the environment, just as competition would be. I mean, you know, you think you're doing well, and then, you think you're in the grocery business, and all of a sudden Amazon buys Whole Foods, and you discover that you've got another big sort of player in the space. So I don't think you can protect yourself from all of these different things. I think you have to manage regulation and plan just as you have to manage competition, just as you have to manage any of the other sort of environmental aspects.
Howard Tolman, always a pleasure to have you here.
Happy to be here.
It's always great. CEO, longtime entrepreneur, CEO of 1871, at least for the next for the foreseeable future. But it has been announced that you're stepping down as CEO, but you'll stay on in other capacities. 1871, of course, a tech incubator here in town. Howard, thanks for being my guest on the Download in Chicago Business.
Thank you.